Conversation 2.
I just finished reading a book of short stories by Hemlyn Garland called May Traveled Road. I really enjoyed it. Have you ever read it?
Yes, it was a required reading in the American literature course I took last year. Even though it's fiction, you get a realistic picture of the hard life people had on the American frontier. I don't think I would survive 19th century frontier life.
Me neither. Remember that story Among the Car Roads? Garland gives a vivid description of Julie Peterson, that young immigrant girl. She had to work on her family farm.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when Julie felt exhausted, she was wishing she could escape from her hard labor. She looked over at her father working in the next field, and she was inspired to continue her own work.
I do remember that story. Garland really captured the spirit of hard work that was so typical of immigrants and pioneers who settled the American Midwest. It's difficult to imagine that nothing seemed to discourage them for long.
I wonder how Garland learned so much about the Midwest. Wasn't he from Boston?
He lived in Boston. In fact, he studied and taught in the Boston School of Oratory, but I think he was born in Lochaber, Wisconsin. He did grow up in the Midwest.
No wonder his description is so good. I'm going to take this book back to the library now and see what other of Garland's works I can find.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
Question 23. What are the man and the woman discussing? Question 24. What does Hemlyn Garland describe in May Traveled Road? Question 25. Why does the man mention Julie Peterson?
Section B.
Passage 1.
As more women in the United States move up the professional ladder, more are finding it necessary to make business trips alone. Since this is new for many, some trips are certainly in order. If you are married, it is a good idea to encourage your husband and children to learn to cook a few simple meals while you are away. They will be much happier and probably enjoy the experience. If you will be eating a good meal alone, choose good restaurants. In the end, they will be much better for your digestion. You may also find it useful to call the restaurant in advance and state that you will be eating alone. You will probably get better service and almost certainly a better table. Finally, and most importantly, anticipate your travel needs as a businesswoman. This starts with lightweight luggage, which you can easily manage even when fully packed. Take a folding case inside your suitcase. It will come in extremely handy for dirty clothes, as well as for business documents and papers you no longer need on the trip. And make sure you have a briefcase so that you can keep currently required papers separate. Obviously, experience helps, but you can make things easier on yourself from the first by careful planning, so that right from the start you really can have a good trip.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 26. Who is the author's intended audience? Question 27. Why is lightweight luggage important for the traveling businesswoman? Question 28. Where would this passage most likely appear?
Passage 2.
A disturbing report appeared recently in the magazine Science. The report describes an experiment, the results of which suggest that there are occasions when psychiatrists, doctors trained in the treatment of mental illnesses, have great difficulty in distinguishing between people who are mentally ill and those who are mentally healthy. In the experiment, 8 perfectly normal people pretended to have mental disorders and received psychiatric treatment in a number of different hospitals. The 8 false patients included several trained doctors who lied about their occupation. They also lied about their names and, naturally, about their symptoms. But in all other respects, they told the truth concerning their lives and their personal relationships. And once they had been admitted to hospital, they behaved quite normally. However, as soon as they had been officially labeled mentally ill, everything they did tended to confirm the diagnosis in the eyes of the medical staff. For instance, if one of the patients approached a doctor and asked a perfectly sensible question such as, "Pardon me, doctor, could you tell me when I will be allowed to use the tennis courts?" The doctor's normal response was to walk straight on, ignoring the question. The 8 false patients stayed in the mental institutions for periods of from 7 to 52 days. They were forced to the frightening conclusion that once a person has disappeared behind the walls of a mental institution, it may prove extremely difficult to convince the medical authorities that he or she is not, in fact, mentally ill.
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 29. Why did the 8 perfectly normal people go into hospital? Question 30. What did the 8 people do after they had been admitted to hospital? Question 31. Why do you think the doctor tended to ignore his patient's questions?
Passage 3.
Stress comes in all shapes and sizes and has become pervasive. It seems to penetrate everything and everybody. It's hard to get through a day without hearing or reading something about stress. Some doctors refer to stress as some kind of new plague. However, numerous surveys confirm that the problem has progressively risen since the 1980s. Why all the disorder? After all, stress has been around since Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden. Stress is an unavoidable consequence of life. Without stress, there would be no life. However, just as distress can cause disease, there are good stresses that balance this and promote wellness. Increased stress results in increased productivity, up to a point. However, this level differs for each of us. It's very much like the stress on a violin string. Not enough produces a dull, harsh sound. Too much makes sharp, annoying noise or causes the string to snap. However, just the right degree can create magnificent tones. Similarly, we all need to find the proper level of stress that promotes optimal performance and enables us to make harmonious music. Good health is more than just the absence of illness. Rather, it is a very robust state of physical and emotional well-being that acknowledges the importance and inseparability of mind-body relationships. In the next program, I hope you will join me in the pursuit of learning how to exploit stress so that it can work for you and make you more productive rather than self-destructive.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 32. What aspect of stress is the talk mainly about? Question 33. How can we deal with stress, according to the doctor? Question 34. According to the speaker, what is stress a sign of? Question 35. What will the doctor do in the next program?
Section C. Now listen to the passage.
Classified advertising is that advertising which is grouped in certain sections of the paper and is thus distinguished from display advertising. Such groupings as help wanted, real estate, lost and found are made, the rate charged being less than that for display advertising. Classified advertisements are a convenience to the reader and a saving to the advertiser. The reader who is interested in a particular kind of advertisement finds all advertisements of that type grouped for him. The advertiser may, on this account, use a very small advertisement that would be lost if it were placed among larger advertisements in the paper. It is evident that the reader approaches the classified advertisement in a different frame of mind from that in which he approaches the other advertisements in the paper. He turns to a page of classified advertisements to search for the particular advertisement that will meet his needs. As his attention is voluntary, the advertiser does not need to rely very much on display type to get the reader's attention. Formerly, all classified advertisements were of the same size and did not have display type. With the increase in the number of such advertisements, however, each advertiser within a certain group is competing with others in the same group for the reader's attention. In many cases, the result has been an increase in the size of the space used and the addition of headlines and pictures. In that way, the classified advertisement has in reality become a display advertisement. This is particularly true of real estate advertising.
Now the passage will be read again.
Classified advertising is that advertising which is grouped in certain sections of the paper and is thus distinguished from display advertising. Such groupings as help wanted, real estate, lost and found are made, the rate charged being less than that for display advertising. Classified advertisements are a convenience to the reader and a saving to the advertiser. The reader who is interested in a particular kind of advertisement finds all advertisements of that type grouped for him. The advertiser may, on this account, use a very small advertisement that would be lost if it were placed among larger advertisements in the paper. It is evident that the reader approaches the classified advertisement in a different frame of mind from that in which he approaches the other advertisements in the paper. He turns to a page of classified advertisements to search for the particular advertisement that will meet his needs. As his attention is voluntary, the advertiser does not need to rely very much on display type to get the reader's attention. Formerly, all classified advertisements were of the same size and did not have display type. With the increase in the number of such advertisements, however, each advertiser within a certain group is competing with others in the same group for the reader's attention. In many cases, the result has been an increase in the size of the space used and the addition of headlines and pictures. In that way, the classified advertisement has in reality become a display advertisement. This is particularly true of real estate advertising.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
Classified advertising is that advertising which is grouped in certain sections of the paper and is thus distinguished from display advertising. Such groupings as help wanted, real estate, lost and found are made, the rate charged being less than that for display advertising. Classified advertisements are a convenience to the reader and a saving to the advertiser. The reader who is interested in a particular kind of advertisement finds all advertisements of that type grouped for him. The advertiser may, on this account, use a very small advertisement that would be lost if it were placed among larger advertisements in the paper. It is evident that the reader approaches the classified advertisement in a different frame of mind from that in which he approaches the other advertisements in the paper. He turns to a page of classified advertisements to search for the particular advertisement that will meet his needs. As his attention is voluntary, the advertiser does not need to rely very much on display type to get the reader's attention. Formerly, all classified advertisements were of the same size and did not have display type. With the increase in the number of such advertisements, however, each advertiser within a certain group is competing with others in the same group for the reader's attention. In many cases, the result has been an increase in the size of the space used and the addition of headlines and pictures. In that way, the classified advertisement has in reality become a display advertisement. This is particularly true of real estate advertising.
This is the end of listening comprehension.
College English Test, Band 4.
Model Test 5.
Part 3. Listening Comprehension.
Section A.
Question 11. It seems to me that you're getting on so well with your neighbors.
Yes, we really hit it off. Our neighbors are incredibly outgoing and hospitable.
What do we learn from the conversation? Question 12. Let's go to the movie after dinner.
Well, I'll go if you really want to, but I'm a little bit tired.
What does the woman mean?
Question 13. I'm sorry I have caused your uncle so much trouble.
Don't worry about it. He's the sort of man who is never happy unless he has something to complain about.
What can we learn about the man's uncle? Question 14. You must have enjoyed using your new camera on your trip.
I would have, but after buying a new camera, especially for that trip, I left it in the car with my friend who drove me to the airport.
What do we learn from the conversation? Question 15. Are you still teaching at the high school?
Not since June. My brother and I went into business together as soon as he got out of the army.
What is the man doing now?
Question 16. Don't you think John and Jim are telling the truth?
It doesn't seem likely. It would be hard to write two compositions so much alike unless one of them was copying from the other.
What seems to be the woman's opinion? Question 17. Has Cecilia been working hard on the term paper?
Day in and day out.
What does the woman say about Cecilia? Question 18. I think that Jane is one of the best typists I know.
I can't agree with you more.
What does the woman think of Jane?
Now you'll hear two long conversations.
Conversation 1. Okay, last night you were supposed to read an article about human bones. Are there any comments about it?
Well, to begin with, I was surprised to find out there was so much going on in bones. I always assumed they were pretty lifeless.
Well, that's an assumption many people make. But the fact is, bones are made of dynamic living tissue that requires continuous maintenance and repair.
Right. That's one of the things I found so fascinating about the article, the way the bones repair themselves.
Okay. So can you tell us how the bones repair themselves?
Sure. See, there are two groups of different types of specialized cells in the bone that work together to do it. The first group goes to an area of the bone that needs repair. This group of cells produces the chemical that actually breaks down the bone tissue and leaves a hole in it. After that, the second group of specialized cells comes and produces the new tissue that fills in the hole that was made by the first group.
Very good. This is a very complex process. In fact, the scientists who study human bones don't completely understand it yet. They are still trying to find out how it all actually works. Specifically, because sometimes after the first group of cells leaves a hole in the bone tissue, for some reason, the second group doesn't completely fill in the hole. And this can cause real problems. It can actually lead to a disease in which the bone becomes weak and is easily broken.
Okay, I get it. So, if the scientists can figure out what makes the specialized cells work, maybe they can find a way to make sure the second group of cells completely fills the hole in the bone tissue every time. That'll prevent the disease from ever occurring.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
Question 19. What is the discussion mainly about? Question 20. What is the function of the first group of specialized cells discussed in the talk? Question 21. What does the professor say about scientists who study the specialized cells in human bones? Question 22. According to the student, what is one important purpose of studying specialized cells in human bones?
Conversation 2. Excuse me, are you going to buy concert tickets?
Yes, I am. So are all these people in front of me.
Have you been here long?
About 45 minutes. I've moved forward a total of about 3 feet in that time.
You are kidding.
Not at all. There was a couple up ahead of me who got so disgusted they finally gave up and left. They said they'd been waiting for more than an hour.
Terrific. Does anyone know what's causing the delay?
If so, no one has let us know. It could be that there aren't enough people selling tickets this afternoon. Or maybe their computer is down. I'm sure the concert hasn't been canceled.
I just hope they don't run out of tickets before I get up there.
That really would be annoying, wouldn't it?
I guess I should have come before lunch. Or has it been like this all day?
Apparently it has. In fact, before I came, I tried calling to charge my tickets over the phone, just to avoid this long wait. But they are not taking phone orders, or checks, or credit cards. It's cash or nothing, and you have to come in person.
Well, there are 2 more hours before the ticket office closes. Tickets for a good concert are worth waiting for. So I think I'll just make myself comfortable.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
Question 23. What is the woman's attitude toward what's happening? Question 24. How are people expected to purchase their tickets? Question 25. What will the man probably do next?
Section B.
Passage 1.
The first English dictionary was published in 1604. The dictionary was actually nothing more than a list of about 3,000 difficult words, each followed by a one-word definition. The author, Robert Cadre, made no attempts to include everyday words in his dictionary. During the 1600s, more dictionaries were published. Each followed Cadre's lead and presented a few thousand hard words. Around 1700, one dictionary maker, John Kersey, did define easy words as well as hard ones. But until the 1750s, all dictionaries were rather crude and not very valuable. A man named Dr. Samuel Johnson changed all this. In 1755, Dr. Johnson produced the first modern dictionary. He included in his dictionary all important words, and he gave good meanings. By the end of the 1700s, most dictionary makers had followed Johnson's lead. Dictionaries were getting better and better. The 1800s saw the greatest improvement in the quality of dictionaries. In England, scholars planned and prepared the Oxford English Dictionary. One of the most interesting features of the Oxford Dictionary is its word histories. It traces the history of each word from its earliest recorded use up to the time of the printing of the dictionary.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 26. What is the passage mainly about? Question 27. What can we conclude from the passage? Question 28. What best describes the first English dictionary?
Passage 2.
In this lesson, I want to talk about the history of the White House. At first, most Americans didn't think there was anything particularly special about the White House. Few had ever seen it or had any idea what it looked like, and even the families who lived there found it completely inadequate. When it was built, the White House was the largest house in the country, and it remained so until after the Civil War. But it served so many different purposes that little of it was available for the first family to actually live in. The first floor, or state floor, was made up entirely of public rooms, and the president's offices, which were staffed by as many as 30 employees, took half of the second floor up. The first family had to get by with the 8 or fewer second floor rooms that were left. By Lincoln's time, the situation was intolerable. The White House was open to visitors. Office seekers and the merely curious had no difficulty making their way upstairs from the official rooms on the first floor. Lincoln was so uncomfortable with the situation that he had a private corridor constructed. He also received a $20,000 appropriation to improve the furnishings of the White House. The new furnishings did not last for more than a few years. When Lincoln was assassinated in 1865, the White House fell into disarray. No one really supervised the White House during the first 5 weeks.
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 29. How did Americans feel toward the White House in the beginning? Question 30. Why was the White House in disarray during Lincoln's time? Question 31. What happened after the White House was refurnished according to the author?
Passage 3.
When I was walking down the street the other day, I happened to notice a small brown leather wallet lying on the sidewalk. I picked it up and opened it to see if I could find out the owner's name. There was nothing inside it except some change and an old photograph. A picture of a woman and a young girl about 12 years old, who looked like the woman's daughter. I put the photograph back and took the wallet to the police station. That evening, I went to have dinner with my aunt and uncle. They had also invited a young woman so that there would be 4 people at the table. Her face was familiar. I was quite sure that we had not met before, but I couldn't remember where I had seen her. In the course of the conversation, however, the young woman happened to mention that she had lost her wallet that afternoon. All at once, I realized where I had seen her. She was the young girl in the photograph, although she was now much older. She was very surprised, of course, when I was able to describe her wallet to her. Then I explained that I had recognized her from the photograph I had found in the wallet. My uncle insisted on going to the police station immediately to claim the wallet. As the police sergeant handed it over, he said that it was amazing that I had not only found the wallet, but also the person who had lost it.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 32. Why did the speaker open the wallet? Question 33. What did the speaker do with the wallet? Question 34. When did the speaker find the owner of the wallet? Question 35. Who was the owner of the wallet?
Section C. Now listen to the passage.
It's official that married people are healthier, or at least they think they are. An American survey of over 100,000 people shows that, despite changing social patterns in society, there is a link between being married and being fit. One reason could be that people with physical, mental, or emotional problems are less likely to marry in the first place. But married people also benefit from greater support from family and friends, and this improves their health. Divorce and loss of a close friend or relative increase depression, as well as affecting many people financially. Married people are less likely than single people to smoke, drink heavily, or drive after they have been drinking. They are also more likely to wear seat belts in a car and install safety devices in their homes. All of these reduce the chances of disease or injury. Single people, by contrast, tend to lead less organized lives, and they take less care of what and when to eat. So, it seems that the best advice is get married, but make sure you find the right partner. If you get it wrong, the stress of a divorce could mean your health gets worse than when you were single.